Have you registered for the Recruitment Coach Live Summit yet? Here's reason number three why this will be the best investment you make in your business in 2025. You'll discover the latest trends. Listen, the recruitment industry is literally changing before our very eyes. What worked 2 years ago or even last year could already be outdated information. If you want to stay current in terms of the technology, the adoption of AI and automation, and the tactics and strategies that are actually working right now in today's marketplace, then you need to get yourself to London on September 17th or 18th. Do not get left behind. Register now at recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and my very special guest today is Jennifer Poloni. Jennifer's the owner of Cascadia Search Group, and she started her career as a sales rep and then sales manager in pharma. After having kids, she decided to join her husband's recruiting agency, which was at the time part of Management Recruiters. She was a pace setter with that organization for 18 out of 20 years. Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you, Mark. I'm glad to be here.
Jennifer, I've had about 10 Pinnacle Society members on the show. You were referred to me by Tyler Frisbee, a fantastic guy. How do you know Tyler?
Tyler and I came into Pinnacle together. We're very new Pinnacle members. We've been there for about 18 months. So we were brought in together. It was really a lot of fun to get to know him.
Yeah, he's such a fantastic guy with an amazing story. I'll include a link for listeners to Tyler's episode in the show notes. But look, tell me your story. Why did you leave a successful recruit in the pharmaceutical industry to get into recruiting?
Great question. I was a pharmaceutical sales manager, and I had to travel a lot because we had POA meetings, and then we had meetings to prepare for the meetings with the sales reps. And my children were quite small at the time. And so my husband had tried to get me to join his firm for a long time. And At that time, I just said, you know what, it's time. And so I was just getting to a point where I didn't want to get on a plane because I was afraid that I wouldn't come back. You know, with little kids, your mind goes crazy. So it was a really good time for me to try recruiting. And I felt like I couldn't fail because I was going to go into pharmaceuticals, which I knew really, really well. And I had a lot of contacts. So that's how it happened.
Fantastic. What sort of ages were your kids when you took the plunge into recruiting?
Yeah, they were really small. They were 2 and 5.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, the travel is not fun when you've got a young family. I made a similar shift. I have three kids who are, they're a bit older now. So, how old are they? 16, 13, and 11. Uh-huh. But when they were really small, I was traveling a lot. It was so hard on my wife because she, you know, trying to look after 2 or 3 kids on your own. And I was away for a few days because I used to do a lot of in-house training where I'd go and work with larger recruiting firms and train their managers and their salespeople. And I enjoyed the actual work, but the travel and staying in hotels, that was not fun at all. So I don't think that was sustainable for me. So now it's like 95% virtual. Even before the pandemic, I was doing mostly this kind of stuff.
That's great. Zoom. Yeah. And they say that once you go to 3 kids, it doesn't triple, it quadruples, you know, it's like 2, you have 1-on-1, but right. With 3, it's crazy.
It is for sure. I can attest to that. So now you have, you sent a note to me with a really interesting accomplishment of having built a sales force of 109 people in 5 months with only your small team of 3 people. Could you tell me a little bit about that project and how you pulled that off?
Yeah, I'd love to tell you the story. So we go to a meeting, it's an oncology meeting called ASCO every year. And this meeting is where 40,000 people get together. There's doctors and all the pharmaceutical companies get there. And there was a guy that I met, he was looking for a job. And I remember it, I came from the conference center, my hair was all wet, it was raining, the wind was blowing, it was Chicago, you know, in June.
Windy City.
Yeah, and I said, oh gosh, I just don't want to go to this meeting. But I you know, got my big girl boots on and went to the meeting, and we sat down and had a few drinks and got him into some processes. And then one day he called me and he said, "Hey, I got another job with Puma." And I go, "Puma?" And that's a shoe company. And he goes, "No, it's a biotech." And then the next thing I know, he says, "I'm not going on your interviews." I go, "You know, that's fine." And then he decided to hire us to do the whole process. So that connection, even though he didn't take the jobs I had him into, he decided to go with us to build that sales force.
So let me just back up a second. So you attended you met this guy at an industry event for oncology?
That's correct.
Okay. But originally he came to you wearing his candidate hat. He was interested in maybe finding another opportunity.
That's correct. Yeah. He had,
okay.
He was one of those top talents that when he got into the process, he had four companies looking at him, and I had him in two processes. And he said, "I'm positive I'm not going to take your jobs." And I said, "I'm going to pull you then." And he goes, "No, I don't want you to look bad." I go, "No, we're both going to look bad if you fly to these interviews and you don't take these jobs." Mm-hmm. And so I pulled him out of the process, which I think he was relieved because his mind was already set on this new job. And then a couple months later, he called me and said, "Hey, I've got to build a sales force and I've got to do this in 4 months. And can you guys help us?" And we were like,
amazing.
We did it.
Do you know, it's so interesting because it's an underappreciated client development method is to just give such an exceptional service to your candidates that they, when they're hiring, they come back to you. What was it about the way that you worked with this individual that made him prefer Cascadia Group versus that maybe the headhunter actually placed him in the job?
That's a great question. I think he didn't go through another recruiter for the other job. I think that was, he just networked with the chief commercial officer and got the role. I think that's how that happened. But I also think that I had to fly down and meet his senior leadership. So we went down there, a couple of us, and we did a presentation. So it wasn't that he handed it to us. We had to still follow up, meet with the chief commercial officer. And the funny thing was, when we got there, I thought our presentation was amazing. And he was just like firing at us, you know, and I with all cylinders. And I thought, oh my gosh, he really doesn't want us to get this. But the HR people liked us and it all worked out in the end. But it was, I called him later and I said, "Man, you didn't help me at all with that." And he kind of just laughed and he said, "Well, I didn't want them to think that, you know, you had it. I wanted you to really do your due diligence and do a good job."
Yes. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. So I still don't know if we've answered the question as to what it was. I understand he didn't just hand it to you, but he opened the door for you and, you know, sponsored you internally. And he must have been familiar with or have had conversations with other recruiters. So, you know, that's definitely worth finding out. You know, what was it about? I like to do a postmortem deals that I lose. People don't always give you feedback, but I'd like to try and ask for it to see how I can improve. Equally, when I win a new client, I try and ask, why did you choose us? Or why did you decide to go for it, and find out what their thought process was there. But if you took a guess, what would you say is your approach to candidate?
That's a great question. And I didn't answer it. I think what it was with that in his whole process, when he was interviewing with the other companies, I would pick up the phone when he called and we'd talk through some of the questions maybe he thought they were going to ask and role play. And also, talk about compensation information when he had questions. So I felt like I was a resource to him. But believe me, he didn't need my help, but I think I might have been a sounding board to him. Because he is really a talented individual. And if he listened to this podcast, he would say, "Oh my gosh, I could do this in my sleep," because he's very, very talented. But I just think I was a good sounding board. And I personally Very think that's so. What helped.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. That's smart. So you then won this project, but holy cow, that's a tall order. How did you go about fulfilling and delivering on this assignment?
That's a really good question as well. What we did was we asked him not to post any of the jobs on their website, because as you know, if you're looking for oncology, you know, people that sell in that space, everybody's going to apply to those jobs that aren't qualified to, and who's going to go through all those resumes. So we got the map of where these places were or where the reps were going to be placed. And then we divided amongst our team of four. And so we didn't overlap. And then we spent 12 hours a day working on this project. We also, not only did we identify the top four candidates for them, then he did a lot of the interviewing himself. I think he interviewed. So he was one of those workaholics that definitely was a good team member. So he was on calls with us daily. We had spreadsheets to keep track of the candidates. Probably the hardest part, Mark, is we planned all the airfare for the candidates to meet. So in every single territory, we had to fly the candidates to the city for their face-to-face interviews. And there were two people for each territory. So that is, you know, 200 people that you're moving around. And so I was always worried that we'd have overlap and have somebody show up in the wrong city, the wrong time. But we were able to pull it all off. So we had somebody that did all the scheduling, and then we had somebody, you know, piggyback on that and just check it out and make sure that it was all, you know, organized and that people were where they were supposed to be.
Wow. That sounds like quite a logistical
nightmare.
We also
had one person at each one of the, like when they were in Chicago, I would go or my partner would go and we would meet the candidates in the lobby. We'd share with them what was going to happen. We'd walk them to the room. We'd debrief after the meetings and then we'd take the next candidate up. So we were really embedded in the whole process.
Yeah. Do you know, I'm so glad you mentioned that. No one does that anymore. That is, you know, almost being on site, whether it's your offices or the client's offices, or in this case, it was in a hotel, but being there on the day of the interviews to prep and debrief every candidate on the spot and then be able to do a wash up with the client at the end is so powerful. And we used to do that all the time, and it just increased your chances of success dramatically. And because the feedback was all live, real time, you know, just gave you so much more insight and control over to what was going on.
Yeah.
So I love that.
Well, coming Mark, back, the best yeah, part of this
ahead.
Whole story
okay, tell me.
Is that after we did that with him, he had another build out with another company. And of course, he called us and we repeated the same process, much smaller scope. It was only 20 representatives and we did it in 6 weeks. But it was just a super fun project because we knew each other all so well.
Absolutely. Wow. 20. It's funny, if you'd had the 21st, it probably would have seemed hard, right?
Exactly.
But because you'd already done 109, then it seemed like a piece of cake. You already had the processes down, Pat. Do you mind me asking, like, how much revenue does that represent, 109 placements?
That's a great question. What we did is we bundled it as a project. And okay. So, you know, if it was a sales rep, it could range anywhere. These projects, I'll say that most companies will charge anywhere from $10,000 to $12,000 a head. So
yep.
Roughly about that, I would say, is right yep. In the ballpark.
Fantastic. And how did you get the buy-in from your team? Because I'm sure they're great people, but 12 hours a day for, you know, for however long it took, it was a serious commitment on their part. How did you keep everyone motivated and kind of focused on that?
It's a great question. I have my partner that's in this with me. He had two kids in college, one going to Berkeley, one going to UCLA. And I think her all in was about $150,000 a year. So she was very motivated, wow, obviously.
Yeah, sure.
And then the other two were younger, but they wanted to buy houses and they were, you know, very committed to some of the things that they wanted to purchase. So they knew that the tail end would be a lot of, you know, financial gain, but that they wouldn't have much of a personal life for, it really was like 4 months of just eating and breathing this project. So if you're not willing to do that, I would not take it on because you will fail miserably because it is a commitment that, you know, I would say I'd like to do every couple years or maybe every 3 years.
Got it. Wow. I mean, to place 109 people, how many candidates did you process in total, including the people who you interviewed and then didn't shortlist or the people who you shortlisted and, you know, went to interview but didn't get the, you know, offered the job and so on?
Well, what we did was when we got a resume that wasn't anywhere near qualified, we'd send a letter to them saying that we'll keep your resume on file. If they were a referral from somebody internally, we always interviewed them because they were an internal referral. And then the other process was we would keep it short with people that maybe didn't meet the qualifications. For example, if they had, I want to say oncology, but they didn't have enough breast cancer experience, then we would move them, you know, move on. Or if they had some significant accomplishments like awards, you know, we might feel that that candidate is worth that. We had a checklist of about 10 things, and the individuals that had the top in all those areas, we graded them. And they moved to the hiring manager. So then the hiring manager could review them. But I would say about probably 500 to 600 resumes we actually interviewed. Wow. Yeah, I would say that. And sales reps are great. They love to talk. So it's not like you're not going to get on the phone and be able to get off in 10 minutes.
I hear you. Okay, that's interesting. So what were... apart from the logistics and just the sheer amount of, you know, hours involved, what were some of the challenges that you had to overcome in order to pull this off?
I think the more frustrating thing was when somebody would call you 24 hours in advance of their interview and say they accepted an opportunity. So they were already out that, you know, the airfare for that candidate, and then they had a hole in there. And, you know, these people are high-level individuals that could do something with that time, and they're sitting in a room, you know, with an hour and a half of time that is being wasted. So that was probably the most frustrating thing, that people would do that, but they did. And then I don't think it was hard. I just think when we knew what the hiring manager was looking for, because he was so entrenched with the process that we knew which candidates could move forward and which couldn't, because the checklist was very clear on what we wanted. So, and I think the most important part too is we wanted to make sure that the candidates, if there was a slowing in the process, for example, if the time period, because it was, you know, we were trying to get them on in June and it went to July. We had to make sure our communication that was back to the representatives, letting them know that our process has slowed a little bit.
Yes. Okay. No, that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned internal referrals. How did you handle that? Because a lot of companies will have internal referral like incentives. Did the company pay you on an addition, pay an internal employee for that referral or?
Yeah. Great question. Yeah. And they did. So we got a flat rate on everybody we placed. So that way it was, and I highly recommend this when you go on and do a project, because then you're vested in bringing the top candidates, both the hiring manager, the internal referrals, the HR, because everybody's in it together. So if you're getting paid a flat fee, nobody cares who it is. We just want to make sure we hire the best. And that eliminates a lot of that. So, yeah.
I think it's a smart move, and it's just one of those things that needs to be discussed up front, you know, and agreed with the client so that everyone's comfortable with what the plan is. So, Jennifer, were you pitching against any other firms to get this project, or how do you think you won the deal when you're still a very boutique firm and, you know, they may have been talking to, you know, bigger search firms?
Yes, they did talk to a couple other search firms. And I think just because we really connected with the HR team, mm-hmm. I think they decided to go with us. Mm-hmm. There are times when we have lost out. And even though I tell them just what I told you, like we lost out on a major project. Well, it wasn't major. It was about 20 reps. And I honestly thought they were going to go with us because we hired all of their commercial people, their marketing people. We were really embedded into the company and felt like we did a great job. They really liked us. The VP of marketing liked us, but she let the HR VP decide, and they were new to the company, and he wanted somebody with more people. So he went with a recruiting agency that had 60. And then I kind of looked at their backgrounds afterwards, just because I knew who they went with. And some of them had not been recruiters for more than 6 months, you know.
Right.
And
so, oh, no.
Yeah. So, you know what? I hope they're successful. But, you know, there are companies that will not go with us because we are so small.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, that's always going to be a challenge when you're one of the little guys and you're competing against the big guys. But on the other hand, you know, you can do your best with the sales presentation, and ultimately you can't control whether they go for it or not.
Yeah.
Right. But, I just feel as you pointed out, the backgrounds, how many of these other firms are getting someone who has actually been a rep, a manager in pharma? And number two, if it's such a big firm, how important is this project to their overall, you know, business, right? Like, what proportion of their revenue does this project represent? Whereas with you guys, it would be a significant, you know, project, and therefore it's going to get your absolute top attention, right?
Whereas, right. And Mark, what we told them right off the bat is we said, you know, if anything else comes, because this is like a retainer, basically they paid us a third up front, a third when we got, you know, halfway through the process, and a third when everybody was hired. And by the way, we had a 99% acceptance rate out of those 109 people. So we were in constant communication, and a lot of people can't say that. We did an exceptional job with that. And we told them we were going to, if anybody called, I had other recruiters within MRI that I could reach out to take on those projects. Because let's face it, I couldn't take on another thing. I had to do, and that's why we did it well. It was, everything was the same. They were all the same specs or job descriptions, the same interview process. So it was all the same. And even the people that were referred, they went through the same process. So it wasn't like you got a shorter, you know, interview process. Everybody did the same exact process.
Got it. I love it. That's a great story. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
It sounds, although it was a lot of work, it sounds really rewarding and fun in many ways. And especially, I think what sounds appealing about that is how close a relationship you had with the client, both the hiring manager and the HR, because that is often not the case. And that's the frustrating thing for recruiters, is when that is lacking and you're not getting the communication, you're not getting the buy-in, and you're treated more as a vendor rather than a partner. And, you know, the whole process is more difficult when that's when that communication, that relationship isn't there. So I think that sounds brilliant.
Thank you. Yeah, it really was. It was a lot of fun, a lot of work, and a lot, like you said, a lot of learnings that made us even better recruiters as we move through the, you know, now I feel like we encourage that in everything we do, just like you said. It's like, not just HR, but let's do an intake call with the hiring manager. Let's make sure everybody's on the same page, you know, whether it's a senior director of marketing or whether it's a sales leader, you know, it's just so helpful to do that. Because like you said, it makes the recruiting process much more seamless and successful.
Can I ask you, Jennifer, I want all the stakeholders on that intake call, or at least to have an opportunity to speak to them, even if it's not everyone on the same call. And sometimes you get pushback from HR or from internal recruitment. They want to control the process and they want all the communication to be with them. How have you been able to overcome that objection in your business?
Yeah, it's a great question. What I do, Mark, is I let them know that I'm not trying to skirt them or go around them. But basically, if we all talk together and include them, then it'll make me do a better job for them. And knowing their little things that they're looking for that might not be on this piece of paper or from you communicating with them, they might give us a little bit of information about their personality. Or it was funny, we just had a big pharma company. And we talked to the VP and with HR, and she saw some pictures that my partner Nicole had on her, you know, back in her office, and they were designer some pictures of art that were fashion pictures, and she wanted us to see. So she takes us through her house with her computer to show us the pictures of the art that was very similar to Nicole's on her wall. So It was really cute because it was all about fashion that was like in the 1950s, you know. So you get to know somebody's personality a little bit with that. So we've got to walk through her house, you know, to see the artwork and just to get to know them a little bit more. You know that working for this person, you're going to have a lot of fun. You just know it. She's just going to be very businesslike, but very fun as well.
Awesome. It sounds, I guess the flip side of that is, do you ever walk away from business, and what would be, you know, your criteria for deciding whether to work with a client or not?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think when they start trying to nickel and dime the fees and bring them down to an area that I feel like they don't value us. Like they don't really understand us. I don't, even though the times are a little tougher now, I feel like that if you go too far down on your fees, there's no value. They don't value you.
Yeah.
Yes. So I would say I walk away from business like that. Not often, but I do.
Yeah. Great. I agree 100%. So switching gears, Jennifer, I saw in your email signature, you have a really cool animated explainer video.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm intrigued to know more about your tailored AI tool that learns from the client's hiring process to refine the candidate identification. And that's such a great differentiator. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
I absolutely can. First off, Mark, as you know, I'm kind of been around for 22 years. So this is not my idea, but I had my son join us about 3 years ago. And he is all about artificial intelligence, high tech stuff. And so like that little video you saw, that was created because he got involved. And it's a great tool. People always want to know about it. But we hired a company called Loxo. Have you heard of them?
Yeah.
Okay. So instead of PCR, which we've had forever, I kind of look at them as Apple versus other computers. You know how Apple is so easy to work? Loxo is so easy to work. And they do have artificial intelligence. And, you know, by certain words, they're able to, you know, find these people. And one of our first placements with Loxo was for a very niched role that we would have never found on our own. So I highly recommend recruiters look into Loxo as a database, because they do have that as part of their process, and it's amazing.
All right. Okay. Now that makes sense then. So it's software that you have invested in. It's not something you've developed just for Cascadia Group.
That's correct. It was something we purchased, and it is where our resumes are put.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a PCR or a database.
Bullhorn or
Database with an artificial intelligence attached to it.
Got it. All right. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Well, you did a good job then in the, or your son, if he's responsible for the animated video of, because it sounds really intriguing, right? Like, wow, they use AI as part of their, candidate search process, and it learns from the client's hiring, history and that sort of thing. So that was well done.
But we do use things like, Mark, when we're on an intake call, for example, and somebody says, I need a market researcher that does demand studies, then boom, we can stick those keywords in there, and we're going to get people that are, very successful in that spot. Do you know what I'm saying? It definitely does that.
It does work. Okay. That's interesting. One thing I was impressed with when I read your career history is how consistent you've been. Like, if you were a pace setter 18 out of 20 years with MRI, that's unusual, because most of us have good years and less good years. And I'm assuming that, I also know that planning is something you're big on. Could you tell me a bit about your planning process?
Yes. I personally believe that this job is not a 9-to-5 job, especially when you're a brand new recruiter. I feel like you have to plan, and then you have to make calls. Now, I realize newer people are out there and they feel like emails and text messages work, but I still feel like the foundation is making those phone calls. And at the end of the day, when you feel like, oh my gosh, I am done, make 5 more. I just think it works. And always that last call of the day is always the best call. And I can't encourage that enough, is to, plan, be consistent, ask for referrals. I think one of the things I learned from Pinnacle was from someone that is super successful, and he kept track of people that he's placed over the years. And then what he does is he reaches out to them to see how they're doing. And how many of us don't follow up with people that we've placed? And so that's an opportunity to get jobs. So I started doing that. I took people that I hired 10 years ago and reached out to them. And I did get some business from that, but it was also super fun to catch up with them,
Yes. So. Brilliant idea. Absolutely. So, by the way, I'm with you on the importance of the good old telephone. I don't think it's an either or. Like, you get these two camps. You get the people who are saying, no, it's telephone, it's old school. That's what it's all about. And then you get the other camp who are saying, no, these days you can't get through on the phone. It's email. It's, online marketing and stuff like that, content marketing. And I think, well, come on, guys, surely it's a mixture of both would be the ideal, right? Why not have the best of both worlds and do all of the above?
I agree with you, Mark. I really do believe it's the power of both. And having a team that is so different, like my partner, Nicole, is, a few years younger, but we're kind of from the camp of call. And then we have some younger people on our group that really like more of the emails, the text messages. And I think it's a combination. And I think they believe it too. I mean, they definitely believe that they pick up on the call and they're going to get referrals. They're not going to get referrals by sending an email saying, who do you know?
Exactly.
People don't like to do that because they're afraid of the consequences, but if you talk to them and you say, hey, I'm not going to share this with anybody, they're more apt to give you that.
100%. Yes. so hard to get referrals from a LinkedIn message or a text message. You need to talk to people and build rapport, and then they open up. So coming back to planning then, could you, you said plan, but what does that actually look like?
Yeah. What I try to do is when I do more of the business development for the team. So I try to have about 30 companies that I'm targeting at all times. And some of them will drop off because there comes a time when you've left 8 to 10 messages with somebody that, you know, maybe it's just not going to happen. Or you finally do get a hold of somebody and they say, we've hired somebody and they're going to do all of our business, you know. So obviously you're hitting your head against the wall if you continue to call them. So I have a list of 30. I have on that list, I want to talk to the chief financial officer, the VP of HR, or the VP of marketing, or the chief commercial officer. So I want to have about 4 or 5 names, and I want to make sure that I reach out to at least 3 of them. So that's kind of what I do. If I know somebody within the company, I definitely would prefer to call them, you know, and see who I should reach out to. So I start with phone calls, emails, and I don't text people. I think this is really important. Don't text people that you don't know, because I think that's bothersome to them. Unless they've responded to your message, and then you feel like you can, they know who you are. I think that's important.
Okay. So you've got, let's say, 30 target companies at any one time, and maybe 4 people in each company, 4 or 5 people. So we're talking 120 to 150 contacts that you're actively working.
Correct.
And so how will you set yourself up to try and be as productive as possible?
Well, what I try to do is before noon to have made like 20 phone calls before noon, and then you got to take a break, stretch, go for a walk, you know, clear the cobwebs. And then the afternoon, I try to do another 20. And then I plan for the next day. What am I going to do? And then I send out emails too to follow up to the calls. I say, hey, Mark, I left you, you know, a voicemail and a little bit of information on that. So right. I do that. I recently went through an email writing class with Henna Pryor. I don't know if you've heard of her.
Go ahead. What was that?
Anyway, she was amazing. There were about 10 pinnacle people that went through it. And I really believe in education and continuing to get better at what we do. And I think the big, what came out of that was that I was doing everything wrong. Like I put on the subject line important, I put in there, I'm an executive recruiter with X number of years of experience. And she's like, wrong. And basically she said, people don't want to hear about you. They want to hear about themselves. So now what I do is I say, you know, something like 3 major mistakes people make in an interview. And then that's my subject line. And then I go into kind of some of the things that people make a mistake about, you know, in the interview, you know, in the interview process, you know, bullet points. And then I let them know that, hey, you know, give me a call and we can touch base about your commercial recruiting needs. And it has improved. The thing that it's taught me is that people want to hear about themselves. So what can you do for them? So you're giving them something, and they may or may not. And I also say that I just need 5 minutes of their time, because people's time, everybody's on a Zoom call these days, right?
Yes.
So if they're going to talk to a recruiter, they think, oh gosh, that's going to be 30 minutes. So just make it softer, 5 minutes of your time, and you know, provide your calendar so that they can just make a quick, you know, introduction or email to you.
Do you know what I've started doing? And I got this tip from one of my coaching clients, is instead of asking for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, ask for 8 minutes.
Oh, that's interesting.
See what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just something about, it's so specific that, You know, if you say 5 minutes, everyone uses 5 minutes as shorthand for however long it turns out to be, right?
Yeah. No, that's a great idea.
But the other thing that we're doing is doing a little bit more research to be able to personalize those emails. So the first sentence in a cold email should be about the person themselves. As you said, people are interested in themselves rather than hearing all about your career history. And so we want to find something either from their LinkedIn profile or from their company website that we can comment on that's like good news. Like, I've really enjoyed your recent LinkedIn post about ABC, and then use that and lead into the rest of the email from there. Or, you know, I see that you recently got promoted to, you know, VP of sales, congratulations, or just saying something personal about them that shows that this isn't just a mass email, but you've actually, you are reaching out to them specifically.
You know what, Mark, so it takes, and that's one of the things Hannah said in her presentation with us, like her workshop went for 7 days and it really talked about, you know, doing exactly what you said, is put something personal about them in there. And that's another reason why, you know, when you're taking notes from talking to somebody, if they say, hey, I'm going to be looking in 6 months, then you can, you know, add that. Hey, and when I talked to you in June, you said you would.
Yes.
Yeah. So really good point. And you can get that on LinkedIn. Do you know there's 300 million people that use LinkedIn? So there's a lot of people there. There's a lot of information out there. And so it's really important to utilize that.
Agreed. Jennifer, I'm interested in hearing your experience of the downturn in 2008-09. I know that was a difficult period for a lot of us. Well, let's start with that. Like, you've been in business for a while, so you've seen the highs and lows, but how did the last recession affect you guys?
It was horrific. I remember my husband saying, oh my gosh, we could lose the house. I want to try to keep the employees on. We had a group of like 12 people. It was really scary. I mean, I would go to the grocery store and I'd have bags and you'd go, what did you buy? You know, like, it, you know, I mean, it was really bad. And we had a big nut because we had salaries. We had a big house payment. And so I think we made $160,000 that year. And 77, I think, percent of the recruiters went out of business that year. Am I right on that, Mark?
I haven't heard that figure, but I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
Where did I get those placements and what did I do? Well, I always believe in being in a niche. Like, I feel like our niche is, I know people in that niche. Well, nobody really cared about my niche at that point. So if somebody called me with some random doctor, you know, I need an MD and regulatory affairs or something really difficult to fill, we took it. I took everything.
Yeah.
I took anything and everything, and I wasn't picky. I just said, I'm going to find these people, and that's what we did. But believe me, I don't ever want to go through that. I've talked to people that are so bubbly about, you know, they've been in the business since maybe 2010, and they have never seen anything like this. So I'm like, but it can happen. And so some of the recruiters that have been around have, I think there was one prior to 2008 too, that was devastating. Yeah. So anyway, you just have to be prepared for it because we're going to have them, right? I mean, they happen. I just hope it's not so severe.
Well, I was wondering how did your experience in the last recession either help you or shape how you've dealt with the pandemic and kind of everything that's been going on this year, 2020?
The pandemic hasn't impacted us as badly as some industries because we're in pharma. Okay. And so what they did is, I thought it would, but they said, hey, we can do these Zoom calls. So a lot of the key roles got filled. By July, we were about $100,000 off of our goal for the year. However, then August came and it really slowed down for us. I mean, some are picking up and we really slowed down. And we had a couple offers that weren't accepted and they were significant offers. So I feel like I need to do a better job of really qualifying the candidates, but it's super hard when they want to interview with other companies at the same time. There's nothing I can do about that. And some of the opportunities might be a little bit better than the opportunities I have. We had a candidate that was able to build out a whole team. Well, the opportunity we had was not that, you know, it was an existing team. So things like that, you can't handle, but you have to have backups. And I told my team, we didn't have the backup that they, now we're back, you know, doing the research to get that, you know, backfill. So we had a couple of those at the end of the year, and those are never they're never good. And one took a counter offer. I haven't had a counter offer taken in a long time. I used to pride myself on that, and somebody took a counter offer and I didn't see it coming.
Yeah. It's that hurts when that happens.
Yeah.
So in terms of your mental toughness then, Jennifer, like during the last recession, you said it was horrible and you're really like super, super stressful. What, where did you find the kind of will to kind of continue and do whatever you needed to do to get through that period?
That was a tough one, Mark, because I didn't feel like I was tough enough, but I just kept making calls, and I realized that I was going to have bad days, and it's okay to have bad days. Like, don't beat yourself up if you don't want to get on the phone. I mean, even now, you know, with the pandemic, people are starting to lose it a little bit because nobody took vacations. You know, and now I find that people are talking to me and they go, I just got to get out of here. I got to go somewhere. I got to at least take another week off. I haven't taken any time off, and the work just seems to keep coming. But I feel like people aren't taking care of themselves because you can work all the time. You know what I mean? So I guess the best thing I can say is that what I try to do is make really block off a time on my calendar to take the dog for a walk, you know, make sure that I'm doing that because it does clear your mind. At one point I got to a point where, hey, I'm going to eat lunch right here and I'm going to find companies to call or, you know, and that's not a good idea. You start doing things poorly, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So taking your lunch break, walking the dog, any other things that you do to take care of yourself to make sure that your emotional bank account is full and you're in a resourceful frame of mind?
Yeah, I definitely, I got a Peloton when this happened and I never thought it was going to be so helpful, but riding the bike, you know, making sure that I do that 3 days a week and, you know, trying to make cooking more fun, you know, because, you know, maybe buy a fun cookbook or read some good novels. I think I'm Netflixed out. I mean, I've bought so much of it. I'm just like, I got to stop doing that. But, you know, I hope that it ends soon, I guess. I think everybody needs it to end. But I think exercise is probably the most important thing to do.
Yes, absolutely. Agree 100%. So what does the future hold for Cascadia Search Group then? Like what are your plans for the business and your vision for the future?
Great question. I really want to continue to work for a while. I have my youngest son is a PhD student at British Columbia at University of BC. Okay. And he's getting his degree in immunology. So I'm very motivated to continue to work because I want to try to help him. And then my oldest son is going to take over the business. So, So he's been with me for 3 years. So I feel like that transition will happen eventually. But I love what I do, Mark. It's been a very, like you said, very rewarding. I think one of the things that being part of Pinnacle, I'm around people that have been very successful over the years. People love to share. People want other people to be successful. And I really wanted to do this podcast with you today because if I could just give some words of wisdom to somebody to help them, I would love to be able to do that because I feel like now it's time for me to give back. And if anything I can do to help others to be successful, I really want to do that.
Well, that's awesome. I agree 100%. And, helping each other and learning from each other as well is important. And you have definitely done that. I'm certain the people listening will have really appreciated your words of wisdom and encouragement. So thank you so much, Jennifer. I really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it too. Thank you so much, Mark.